VAT, value-added tax equals sales tax, etc. This is just another means to confiscate your funds and your personal power. GST, goods and services tax, is another use tax which we are not required to pay, not only because there is no law compelling us, but also because of who we are, which we have been persuaded to forget. I like to carry around tax-exempt status card or a tax exemption certificate, which I show the owner/manager of places I frequent to prove I am not obligated to pay any tax, never mind that I am not obligated to pay for anything. Not only did I already prepay whatever it is I want, but also I am not subject to any ad valorem tax, VAT. Again, sovereigns are not required to pay tax. We are sovereign until we acquiesce to behavior which vitiates this fact. Do you think the Queen is tax exempt? Is the Pope Zionist? So, we are tax exempt, and all we have to do is say so, even though we have been taught no longer to believe in our sovereignty. My prime concern is gas, because the total tax is 37%. I know I'm not required to pay it, I even have the corroboration of CRA, however, I am having trouble with the oil corporations, surprise, surprise. After perusing my gas receipts, I sent the CFO, Chief Financial Officer, a true bill for $146 he has yet to fork over, so I paid for gas one day with a transfer instrument. He called the cops on me because his fiduciary, yes, a bankster, didn't recognize it. I straightened it out with the RCMP and told the CFO that I wanted the name of the officer at his bank, because the receiver general probably wants to know who is not honoring my transfer instruments, particularly since he and I have an agreement that they will be honored. I probably won't bother to file a PPSA against this twit for a measly $146 in GST and fuel taxes, the financial liability of which he has unlawfully passed along to you and me. I will, however, send the banks a 1099/T4 slip, copy to IRS/CRA, evidencing the income they received for all the service fees they charge. It's income for them. Law should I abide by the rules until they're changed, or help speed the change by breaking them? Ashley Brilliant, a cop, once stopped me for seat belt violation. I asked him, who is the injured party? The state of New Mexico. The state of New Mexico doesn't exist, New Mexico state exists. When I asked him, if I were to call the state of New Mexico to the stand, who would show up? He didn't know how to answer me, because no one would or could show up. No name in uppercase can be an injured party, because it is a fiction, an entity created by the government. Only flesh and blood living souls can be injured. So, he asked me for a driver license, which I didn't have, because having one would grant him immediate jurisdiction over me, which, as yet, he didn't have. I asked if I were required to have one, and if so, could he provide for me the law which compels me. Later, he did actually show me the statute, all operators must be licensed, but I noticed that it did not apply to me, nor did it detail any consequences for said operator, which also was not I, if this person were not licensed. There was no implementing regulation, the enforcement clause. It was simply one of many traffic codes which apply only to those who thought them up. They have no clout with those of us who don't agree to them. Laws can't compel, they can only protect. If the law doesn't protect me, the law doesn't apply to me. Hence, there is only one law, the Golden Rule, and the breaking of this law results in the infringement upon the life, liberty, property, or rights of a natural being who has every right to seek just compensation for the injury. Everything else is statute and applies only to those who are subject to them, namely those who thought them up. All codes, rules, regulations, statutes, bylaws, and ordinances apply only to those involved within the departments who documented them. What? So, the Internal Revenue Code applies only to IR agents, CRA codes apply only to CR agents and anyone else who might care to contract with those agencies. Do you? I don't. The function of the law is not to provide justice or to preserve freedom. The function of the law is to keep those who hold power, in power. Gary Spence, From Freedom to Slavery, 1993. When only lawyers can understand the law, then only lawyers should be required to obey the law. Chuck Conn sees under current law, it is a crime for a private citizen to lie to a government official, but not for the government official to lie to the people. Donald M. Fraser 42 Since equality under law is paramount and mandatory by law, and we know everyone in court lies, it's a dog and pony show. Why was Martha Stewart sentenced to prison for lying? It is because she agreed not to. Since contract is the only law, she breached the contract wherein she agreed to tell the truth. Had she declined to tell the truth, she would not be in prison. There is no law against lying. When you break the big laws, you do not get liberty, you do not even get anarchy. You get the small laws, codes, rules, regulations, statutes, ordinances. G.K. Chesterton, the minute you read something you can't understand, you can almost be sure it was drawn up by a lawyer. Will Rogers, minding one's business is the only moral law. Frederick Bastiat, the law. I have been asked rather sarcastically, so, you think you are above the law? Of course, I am above the law. Bob Dylan said, to live outside the law you must be honest. It makes me more honorable. The Creator is always above the created. If man made laws, then man is above what he made. I never said I was above the Creator's laws. I claim to be above man's laws, mostly because they don't apply to me. But that's not my point here. Think of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. This is an example of the created being above the Creator. Did it work for Dr. Frankenstein to create something more powerful than himself? Why then, would we think it would work for us? Stopping at a stop sign when we can see well in advance of the intersection that there is no reason to stop is just being subject to idiocy. Is it our intention, in this example, to serve a stop sign, or was it our intention to create the sign in order to serve us? Why are we bowing to it? Are you saying, but I stop so that the police won't charge me with not stopping at the stop sign? The role of police is changed. When I was a child, I was taught, the policeman is your friend. If you become lost, find a policeman, who would, in those days, be walking his beat, deterring shop theft by his mere presence, so it would be easy to find one on almost any street corner, and he'll bring you home. Mums would be so grateful that he would be invited in for tea and biscuits. I have been obliged to teach my children, the policeman is not your friend. If you become lost and go to a policeman, he might bring you home, but he will take me to jail for child neglect and for allowing my child to get lost. Remember, the presumption is that my children don't belong to me but to the state, and I would be charged with neglect of their property. It just so happens that my boys do belong to me because I have actively rebutted that presumption. Actually, my sentiments towards police have been learned as I started out liking them. When I was 20, I was hitchhiking up north in Ontario to visit my boyfriend. A cop stopped me and I thought I was in deep trouble. As it turned out, he truly did care for my welfare and stopped a car with a bunch of kids and told the driver to take me to Fern Resort in Orillia. The cop gave me the proverbial police escort to the exit ramp, and the kids thought it was a hoot and took me directly to my destination. I am reminded of the story of a fellow in Michigan who has five children, the first four of whom have birth certificates. The youngest was born at home and hence has no birth certificate, same as mine. One day the dad was in a store with his kids and was yelling at one of them. A public-minded woman overheard this and, like all good informants, telephoned Child Protective Services to report child abuse. The next day the cops came by and confiscated all five of his children. The following day the cops came by and returned the youngest, saying, this one's not ours. This is reason enough to make sure your children belong to you and not the state. For you Canadians who think that your public servants are above this type of seeming theft, think again. It is not theft. If you have signed over your children to the public via the birth registration, I suggest you get your papers in order to prevent the feds from collecting their collateral, those whom you call my children, for the interest on the loan. So, what is the job of policemen these days? It is not to serve and protect, unless this refers to serve and protect the world banksters. Their sole purpose is to collect revenue for the interest on the debt due to the bankruptcy. They are no longer peace officers. The Motor Vehicle Department/Department of Transportation, MVD/DOT, are under the Tax and Revenue Department. What does this tell you? This is why there are so many idiotic statutes which are a result of Admiralty law which simply do not apply to living souls, they apply to corporate entities. So how is it we get stuck with the fine if the statutes don't apply to us? Since laws cannot compel performance, there can be no law telling a property owner that he must build his house on a particular area of his property. Because, what if he doesn't? Upon whose rights is he infringing? Well, possibly his neighbor, in which case the neighbor would be obliged to file a signed, sworn complaint, ideally also signed by a deposable witness, and have a jury decide if he is indeed an injured 43 party. Laws cannot do anything but protect the life, liberty, property, and rights of a living soul. Laws are to serve us, we are not here to serve laws. If your laws don't protect me, your laws do not apply to me. So, yes, we are above the law, when the word law refers to statutes. The problem is now statutes. Statutes are compelling. They seem to tell us everything we are obliged to do and everything we can't do. Statutes have replaced the true one law. Where before, we could be found guilty for actively breaking the only law there was, we can now be found guilty for doing nothing, meaning neglecting to perform precisely as the statute dictates. Since there are so many, this will occur automatically just in the affairs of daily life. That cliche, ignorance of the law is no excuse, was true when the law to which it referred was the only law we were required to know. But since that one law no longer exists, except in our hearts, that cliche now applies only to statutes. Ignorance of the statutes is no excuse. Ignorance of the statutes is every excuse, because there are 60 million of them, 59,999,973 of which no one has informed you. Trust me, you are guilty of disobeying some, if not many. What happened? Attorneys make up statutes. So a few questions come to mind. 1. To whom do these statutes apply? 2. Who benefits when one does not adhere to statutes? 3. What is the purpose of having so many statutes, codes, rules, regulations, ordinances, legislation in the first place? 4. Since when can attorneys make laws? Rather, statutes? 5. Isn't lawmaking the job of government? 6. Why would any representative of the people enact statutes which don't serve his constituents? The Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917 reclassified us all as belligerents under an emergency situation, actually a declaration of war. So your rights were suspended and a strawman created with an SSN/SIN. Since the politicians did away with the common law and other law which constituted the traditionally vested right of the people, what was put in its place? Commercial law. This is why people lose trying to argue constitutional rights. Courts are military tribunals sitting in summary court-martial proceedings against civilians. Constitutional and common law arguments are not allowed in such courts. If we were to go back to the common law, as brutal as it might have been, the entire system of welfare, income taxes, bureaucracy, codes, ordinances, regulations, bylaws, legislation, and rules would cease to exist. Attorneys, the legal profession has no more to do with law than the medical profession has to do with health. So, when you hear nonsense such as, practicing law/medicine without a license, notice that the accused is usually practicing health or its counterpart in law where a license isn't required. A license is acquired only by those who choose to be under the jurisdiction of the entity issuing said license. Those of us who choose to remain free make certain not to obtain any licenses at all. A license to practice law is procured by an attorney from the client who hires him and, until such time, does not have a license to practice law. Yes, he has a bar card, but this has nothing to do with a license to take a case which must be obtained from the one who hires him. Consequently, this is a great question to ask an attorney whom you don't want involved in your commercial affairs. I like to tell them that I don't give them permission to make a legal determination about me, because, until I do, they have no venue or jurisdiction. They are astray looking for a home. They have nowhere near the power they like you to think they have. So, you want to be an attorney, here is your job description, prosecute on behalf of IRS/CRA in order to imprison 1 for failure to file, be appointed to, foisted upon, us by a judge upon our being accused of a crime, reject our filing of private documents into the public record, initiate and file all criminal complaints, we are prohibited, confiscate property and funds from marital partners, dictate child custody during divorce proceedings, regulate private property via land use, planning laws and codes, advise employers to confiscate funds via withholding tax from paychecks 44, approve the confiscation, by child protection agents, of children from their families, begin foreclosure proceedings when too many mortgage payments are missed, confiscate property when property taxes aren't paid, pilfer our estate via probate after our death, turn into a crime an activity which has been natural and lawful for centuries, yet, due to current legislation, now requires a license, initiate actions against us for committing a crime which, until recently, was a lawful activity, reap hefty fees for exaggerating personal injury claims causing insurance premiums to skyrocket, claim to be able to handle personal disputes better than those involved, complicate simple contracts between two parties to where they are completely incomprehensible, file unnecessary, embellished paperwork for what would normally be considered simple claims, depersonalize and complicate intimate processes such as adoption, be the only one allowed into a jail cell even though a friend might better assist us, play both sides of the court, through the bar police your own, be in charge of accreditation of law schools, determine the curriculum in law schools by granting or refusing accreditation, make and enforce laws designed to work only for you, make and enforce statutes which are impossible not to violate because there are over 60 million of them. Be the power behind all agencies which control the rest of us, be a henchman and revenue collector for the IMF/international banksters, become power of attorney when we hire you, grant you a license to practice law, thereby rendering ourselves incompetent. Once I told an attorney, with as straight a face as I could muster, that I truly believed that he was an honest fellow. He responded with, "Well, I try to be." I said, "Well, if you were truly honest, you wouldn't need to try to be." He was as crooked as a dog's hind leg. My all-time favorite attorney routine is the asking of two questions for the price of one. Did you or did you not? An attorney once asked me one of these double-edged questions and so I asked, "What is it you want to know?" He repeated the question so I answered, "Which question do you want answered?" He repeated it again, so I said, "No to the first question, yes to the second." Not only didn't he understand my answer, but also he didn't understand his own question. If I had answered just yes, how could he know to which part I was referring? Yes, I did not. Or yes, I did. As idiotic as it is, attorneys still use this inane manner of questioning. They must think it sounds daunting, when in fact it only makes them sound as if they don't know what they're talking about, which in most cases is true. But this stunt also allows them to twist any answer to suit their case. Don't fall for it. Always answer with either "I did" or "I did not." In fact, skip the court altogether. There is nothing requiring you to go in the first place. Whom did the court invite? You? I don't think so. All you have to do is RSVP. An invitation to court is tantamount to an invitation to a Charles Manson party. Don't go, graciously decline. Licensure: a license is a permit to do some activity which would otherwise be illegal. A license is the authority to act on something which in its nature is lawful but prohibited by statutes except with permission of authority. This activity is now a privilege and can be revoked, leading to no liberty, liberty being defined as freedom and exemption from extraneous control. Take a look at all the activities for which most people have been conned to believe we are required to have licenses: marriage, building, driver, firearms, business, professional, trade, bar ticket, hunting, etc., which tells us that without these permits, the following activities are illegal: creating a home and family with someone you love, adding a room onto your house, traveling to a friend's house in your personally owned automobile, protecting your family from intruders, earning your living from your privately owned business, taking care of infirmed fellow living souls, fixing someone's plumbing/electricity, going into a court of law, apart from the fact they no longer exist, they are now courts of commerce, about a matter between you and a colleague, shoot your food in the wilderness, etc., etc. The list goes on. Why would a free man or woman require permission from the government to get married, drive a car, start a business, add on to one's home, or improve one's property? We are no longer free to do anything because statutes have been enacted requiring us to get permits in 45 order to do some activity which does not infringe upon the life, liberty, property, or rights of another. It's all about control. The catch-22 of this is that you're damned if you don't have a license because you will get fined for not having one, and damned if you do because you will get fined for doing something which the permit does not allow. Either way, one is asking for control. Personally, I take a chance on not having the license. I have no licenses. I have given up all of them. I do have a driver permit which I created for the purpose of facility, something to show the cops to pacify them as opposed to telling them I don't have a driver's license, which I did years ago and only created problems as opposed to accomplishing what I intended. Yet, what I carry is not government issued, it is self-issued. Those of us with self-issued licenses not only claim our rights in a responsible and organized way as a peaceful transitional declaratory offering for government observance, but also it introduces the concept of liberty to others. The problem is the contract. If we don't have a contract with the authority, they have no authority over us. Alleged authorities do everything in their power to intimidate us into getting these permits, such as telling us it is law, etc., when in fact they cannot make anyone get a license for anything, since this would be forced contracting, the very nature of which would make it invalid. Not only do we have unlimited right to contract, but also unlimited right not to contract. So, since I graduated from a school which gave me a diploma stating that I obviously knew enough about nursing in order to get a job doing this, why do I need a license to do it? Have you ever noticed that in obtaining a driver license, the two things they most want from you is a signature and an address? They couldn't give a damn if you know what to do with the car, they want to get your signature on this fraudulent contract and also know where they can find you if you do something they don't like, and they can come and get you and slash or your car. Never put on any contract the location of where you sleep at night, and never carry any ID with an address on it. I carry a very outdated, 15 years, passport because its picture of me is great. Actually, it is great ID because it has no address. One time a cop asked me for ID. I asked him if I were required to have ID, sensing I could be causing trouble. I pulled out some ID and said, "Well, I do have ID, but the info on it is only hearsay, I don't know if it's true, so how would you know? Is hearsay admissible in court?" That was the end of that. Never sign any contract unless you are given full disclosure and understand every term of the contract. Never agree to any terms and conditions which you know won't work for you. This is the purpose and meaning of a contract, something to which both parties can agree to be bound without compunction, a meeting of the minds. So, feel free to line out and be sure to initial what you don't like. Then, in the place for signature, write, by your autograph, agent, as you are agent to the strawman, no doubt to which the contract applies. Once signed, it cannot be changed. As acceptor or rejecter, you are in control. Make it work for you. You can include, without prejudice or all rights reserved, or UCC 1-207/1-308, which will protect your right not to be compelled to perform under any contract or commercial agreement that you did not enter knowingly, willingly, voluntarily, and intentionally. Yet I recommend agent or authorized representative after your signature, which means that you, the living soul, are not the entity to whom the alleged contract applies. The word by right before your autograph is the best because it evidences your agency. Licenses control, regulate, stifle, intimidate, rob, and destroy. Licensure is presented under the guise of protectionism. Government's license in order to make work for secretaries, boards, bureaucrats, and commissions whose function it is to assure government an additional source of revenue from the price of granting its permission. Tyrannical governments prefer that their subjects/slaves be required to ask for their permission prior to, and as a condition of, doing nearly every kind of independent, public, or private activity. Such governments want servile subjects who do what they are told to do. So, entire administrations are created to promote the acceptance of licensing as for the common good or for public protection. Protect me from the protectors. Anthony Wilkes Croft, my uncle. Governments need armies to protect them from their enslaved and oppressed subjects. Tolstoy. Government licensing is all about the difference between a right and a privilege. A free individual has the right to do anything as long as in doing so no threat or harm is done to the life, liberty, property, or rights of another. However, one must request permission to do something which transgresses the rights or property of another, in which case only the one owning the right or property has the authority to grant the permission. As the government has no rights to give, it has only duties and limitations, and it has no authority to collect 46 any revenues other than duties, impost, and excise taxes, government has no authority to profit financially from licensing. Everyone knows the only way that everyone could know anything is if someone had a vested interest in making sure that everyone knows something. In every case of everyone knows is one who stands to benefit by what everyone knows. Hence it cannot possibly be a truth, since all truths seem to be known by very few, because all truth can be known only intuitively and/or experientially. I don't know of anything that everyone knows which is true, do you? The only reason that everyone knows anything is because they've been propagandized into allegedly knowing, the public fool system being the best perpetrator of this fraud. How is it that an entire continent can know when to set clocks ahead and back? Yet very few know that when we are upset it is never for the reason we think. Did someone forget to put that on the front page of the newspaper? So, if everyone knows something anything, you can count on there being one with something to gain from our knowing it. You can also count on its being untrue. Therefore, everyone knows you have to pay income tax, get a driver's license, get a good education, etc., none of which is true. Everyone knows you have to go to court when you are summoned. Never go to court. The court is only a third-party debt collector for a foreign corporation. You are never named on any summons. Even that which you consider to be your name is not you, it only represents you. You are not a party to the action. You cannot be charged, because no fiction, any public entity, can bring any claim against a living soul. So, when you are served a summons, check to see if your name is on it. It can't be. The exception is, of course, if the plaintiff is another living soul and is bringing you into court because you truly have injured him by breaking the one law, which he will have to prove. When you go into court, you are putting your fate into the hands of 12 people who weren't smart enough to get out of jury duty. Norm Crosby. Since the courts get more mileage/kilometerage from our thinking that the Constitution/Charter of Rights and Freedoms is the law which the courts are bound to use, and wasting our time citing it, they really don't want us to know that it doesn't apply. Actually, this is good news, better news, and best news, since relying upon these documents for legal argument just makes judges rule against us. These documents apply to sovereign entities, however. If you find yourself in court, it is because you have relinquished your sovereignty, or you wouldn't be there. So, in fact, if you are in court, these documents do not apply to you. The supreme law of the land is contract law and falls under the UCC. The significance of Erie versus Tompkins case decision of 1938 is that no cases prior to 1938 are allowed to be cited. There can be no mixing of the old law with the new law. All lawyers are members of the bar and controlled by the Lawyers Guild of Great Britain. They created, formed, and implemented the new bankruptcy law and are sworn to uphold the bankruptcy. We can never know the true nature and cause of the accusation, because it is the collection of interest on the bankruptcy. We are denied our right to challenge the creditor/banker, because if we could face our accuser, we could ask about our indebtedness, and this would blow their cover. They would have to provide us with the contract proving we knowingly, willingly, and voluntarily agreed to pay the corporate public debt, which, of course, we did not do. The PTB have apprised the government/attorneys of the law/statutes under which this system works. We have moved from real law to statutes made up by the attorneys for the sole purpose of collecting revenue and property. You assist an evil system most effectively by obeying its orders and decrees. An evil system never deserves such allegiance. Allegiance to it means partaking of the evil. A good person will resist an evil system with his or her whole soul. Mahatma Gandhi, read the law and you will see that it suggests a circumstance which works for one and all. Read any statute and you will see that it compels one to a particular performance, which implies yet never states, if not performed, a fine is imposed. There is no mention of fines in any statute, code, rule, or regulation. Where is the implementing regulation? They all just state what we are all supposed to do. The reason most have not squawked too much about these statutes is that they believe they are getting some privilege which compensates for the occasional fine, and yet just the opposite is true. 47 A neighbor told me years ago that she was all for everyone getting social security numbers. If they can catch just one deadbeat dad, then it is worth it. This is what she was led to believe. If you ask the wives of these deadbeat dads, you'll discover that the pittance the feds give her, after ordering dad's boss to garnish his wages, is taxable and she will be worse off than before, particularly if she has paid an attorney to bring dad into court in order to get the order. It is never worth it. Again, it is win/win for the feds and lose/lose for both parents. If only parents could to sit down and negotiate, they, along with their children, would all win. Involving the state means you lose all control. Just so you know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel and it is not the light of an oncoming train, here is an encouraging story. In her book, Energy Medicine, Donna Eden tells of having taught a class wherein one of the attendees was a judge. Imagine a judge being so enlightened as to go to a class on energy medicine. A few months later he contacted her and related a case he had before him. A man had beaten his wife and the neighbor who had attempted to intervene. The children were aghast and everyone was stunned because this man was a true family man and good neighbor. He just went berserk one evening. The judge asked Donna Eden, "Just before I pass sentence on this fellow, I wonder if this might be a case of that triple warmer thing we learned about in your class, a meridian line of energy which when blocked causes chaos." Donna thought so from the description of the man's behavior. The judge sentenced the man to a dozen of Donna Eden's energy medicine classes. So, you see, we are making our way into the light. Is this a judge we want our fellows and/or ourselves to face? You bet. Courts, kangaroo court. 1. A self-appointed tribunal or mock court in which the principles of law and justice are disregarded, perverted or parroted. 2. A court or tribunal characterized by authorized or irregular procedures, especially so as to render a fair proceeding impossible. 3. A sham legal proceeding. Black's 7th page 359 Common Law Courts, CLC, versus Judges Chambers, JC. Commonly known as municipal, district, state, provincial, appellate, supreme, federal, courts, law CLC 1. 1. Law, the golden rule. You are free to do anything you please as long as you do not infringe upon the life, liberty, property, or rights of a living soul. 2. Is the truth, JC 1. Equity law compels performance via contract. This can be only civil, not criminal. Yet failure to perform as directed by a court can bring charges of contempt, which is a criminal action. Admiralty/maritime law, civil jurisdiction of compelled performance, which has criminal penalties for breach of contract. Since international contract backs codes, etc., and courts won't admit to this jurisdiction, they call it statutory jurisdiction. There are 60 million statutes, codes, rules, regulations, ordinances. Since 1938, all decisions will be based upon commercial law with criminal penalties. This is why you can go to jail for not wearing a seatbelt. 2. Is colorable truth cannot be seen or heard asterisk purpose CLC to compensate injured party JC to obtain a contract in order to collect revenue for the Crown, to pay the interest on the bankruptcy. Recognizes CLC accuser and accused 48 JC only debtors and creditors. Fictions and Sovereigns Plaintiffs and Defendants Jurisdiction CLC belongs to jury JC judge has none and so tricks us into granting it judge's role CLC judge is mediator JC judge approves motions and signs summary judgments against living souls summons CLC accused is summoned to court via a signed, sworn, witnessed complaint by an injured party JC living soul is tricked into chambers as defendant via a summons, thereby granting jurisdiction. The summons needs only to be signed by the judge thereby making it a summary judgment. Pleading CLC accused can plead innocent JC no innocent plea, only guilty or not guilty or no contest procedure CLC straightforward and works for all involved JC is backwards or mirror image, works only for the court plaintiff CLC accuser whom accused can face JC corporation represented by a prosecuting attorney who confronts defendant burden of proof CLC accuser must prove accused guilt JC defendant must prove innocence yet, it is impossible to prove a negative. Accused slash defendant CLC presents himself or has a lawyer represent him, defend, ward off attack from, OED, the word itself accurately suggests we are going to court as one to be attacked. J.C. Strawman, represented by an attorney arguing and testifying CLC will present the truth of the matter the facts J.C. will put us into dishonor, make us the debtor, no debtor can win, no creditor can lose verdict CLC accused is either guilty or innocent J.C. attorneys have the defendant. Plea bargain since, if defendant is indeed innocent the attorney makes nothing on the deal, other than his client fees, hence, the attorney works both sides of the court. Crime CLC infringement upon life, liberty, property, or rights of a living soul, a civil suit, 49 JC all crime is commercial a breach of contract attorney CLC none is needed, the accused presents himself or hires a lawyer to work for him JC 1 tricks living soul to believe he is the defendant, 2 is sworn to collect revenue for the crown, 3 represents both sides of the court the corporate strawman defendant and the crown so he can't lose 4 makes sure his client loses so he can. Get a cut of the fine, not so in civil suits, 5. Works solely for the court unless he contracts to work for the living soul in which case he becomes a lawyer jury CLC trial by jury, the jury judges both the facts of the case and the law itself JC jury trial which means that the jury does what the judge directs this might include ignoring either the facts of the case and slash or the law in question charges CLC accused is permitted to face his accuser, the injured party. JC defendant is charged by prosecutor who represents the plaintiff always a corporation, never a living soul do you understand? CLC judge asks this in order to know if accused is clear about the complaint JC judge asks this in order to get defendant to contract sentencing CLC jury gives verdict, judge sentences with jury's approval, a living soul pays a fine or serves time JC strawman slash defendant, not living soul, is sentenced. Unfortunately, the living soul thinks he is the defendant. Everyone who is in jail is there because of something he said, or failed to say, prior to, or during, an administrative tribunal, not for some wrong deed. Asterisk in an equity court which is all there is since there are no more courts of law when we are asked, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth so help you God? We must respond no not to be contemptuous but rather because the truth cannot be told. Courts of equity can neither see nor hear truth. They are courts of fiction and cannot have any truth within. If indeed one tells the whole truth the cat will be let out of the bag and he will thereby be in contempt and go directly to jail. We must tell our truth, which is that we accepted and returned their offer, more later, yet telling the truth will land us in jail very quickly. Remember that Martha Stewart got herself into trouble not by having anything to do with insider trading but by lying. Since there is no law against lying, the only way she could be convicted was for her to have made it a crime to lie. The only way that she could have made lying a crime is by contracting and agreeing not to lie. The only way she could contract and agree to that was to swear to tell the truth. It was her swearing in that created the contract which she later breached by lying which convicted her. Had she never agreed slash contracted to tell the truth, she never would have been convicted. Her conviction had nothing to do with insider trading or lying, it had everything to do with contracting. A game warden caught a man with furs in the trunk of his car. Every time the warden, and ultimately the judge, asked about the furs, the man responded with, "What furs?" Even when the furs were pointed out to him, he asked, "What furs?" They had to let him go because he never contracted 50 contracts. I am not making this up. The courts literally trick us into contracting with them in order for us to slit our own throats by breaching the terms and conditions of the contract. This is why we are asked if we will swear. We have an option. We are not required to tell the truth unless we swear we will, i.e., enter into a contract with someone and agree to tell the truth. The sole purpose of that question is to get us to contract. They have no jurisdiction until we contract. As long as we do not contract with them and no law can compel anyone to contract, we can remain free. We have the right to contract and the right not to contract. All they do is go along with us. They have no commercial energy of their own, they rely on us to give it to them. All law is commerce, all commerce is contract, no contract, no case. The following toothpick story illustrates this concept. A fellow went to court and had managed not to contract right to the end when he said, "It seems my public business is finished here, so I am now leaving," and headed to the door. The judge yelled, "And take that toothpick out of your mouth," and the man did. As soon as he did, the judge yelled to the bailiff, "Arrest that man." Why? Because by removing the toothpick from his mouth, the man had contracted with the court. All law is contract, every interchange between people is contract, all commerce is contract, contract makes the law, remember, anything that requires your signature, or a swearing thereto in order to give it application, is not law, but a contract. Ron Branson, JAIL Judicial Accountability Initiative Law, at Common Law, these 8 elements are essential to the creation of a contract: offer, acceptance, intention, sufficient and equal consideration, mental and lawful capacity to contract, legality of purpose, genuine consent, knowingly, willingly, and voluntarily, certainty of terms and conditions. You are usually tricked into contracting. I heard of a woman who was charged with writing bad checks and prior to sentencing was asked by the judge if she had anything to say. This is called allocution and is the time for the defendant to say what's so. Unfortunately, most defendants fail to take advantage of this opportunity to set the record straight. She, however, told the judge, "With all due respect, I do not accept your sentence." The judge then said, "I sentence you to 25 years. Again she said, "I do not accept your sentence." He called both attorneys, who were now visibly irate, to come forward. The judge then asked, "Well, Ms., would you think it kind of the court to sentence you to only 10 years? Again she said she would not accept his sentence. The judge's final words, to the dismay of the attorneys, were, "I hereby dismiss this case and all charges are dropped." He couldn't do anything without her agreement. This is the power of contracts. By the way, it is impossible to write a bad check, there is no such thing. If it has a date, a payee, a dollar amount, and an autograph, it is a lawful commercial instrument because the funds are created by those 4 requirements. If it is kept by the corporate entity to which one has specified credit/pay to the order of, then it is clearly being used as such. Don't let anyone tell you that you wrote a bad check. Sure, there might not have been debt funds in the account to cover it, yet that doesn't mean that the private side hasn't been accessed. In fact, you can be certain that it has been if it weren't returned to you, and if it has been returned, then keep in mind that a debt/legal tender, payment, offered in honor, in good faith, and refused, is a debt discharged. There is no commercial crime here except on the part of the entity trying to charge you with writing a bad check. Remember, a promissory note is a promissory note is a promissory note. More later when I recount my latest adventures with RBC, Royal Bank of Canada, and CRA, which continues to change its name, so just remember it as the Canadian version of IRS. An offer of contract becomes binding after 72 hours, 3 days, after 7 days there is a default, and after 10 days there is a summary judgment. So handle your offers immediately. The basis of 99% of all legal actions is derived from a person, strawman, being sued, or accused of having entered into and breached a commercial contract, or being presumed to have entered into and breached a commercial contract. If the contract does not meet the four legal requirements, it is void. In order to live free, we must remain eternally vigilant of these invisible contracts and avoid the presumption of their existence. The most significant presumptions are: 1. That you are a resident, 51(2). That you depend upon the government for benefits, 3. That you are not responsible for your behavior, and 4. That you need protection: an attorney, a financial advisor, a doctor, a fiat currency, etc. Protect me from the protectors. All the above are false presumptions, the existence of which is perpetuated upon the belief that all land and people are collateral for a debt which supports a fraudulent monetary system. All are based upon the presumption that certificates of birth/title, etc., in commercial law, waive our right to take responsibility for our own affairs and own our bodies, plus life, liberty, and the property we accumulate through trading our labor with others or creating from raw materials, if we don't object to or arrange our affairs otherwise. The PTB have established a long history, hundreds of years, of lending what is considered money or credit and then calling in debts, and creating wars around the world over these debts. Believe it or not, 1IRS/CRA is not a government agency, it is a collection agency. All alphabet agencies, CIA, DOT, etc., are agencies of the IMF, International Monetary Fund, which is an agency of the UN too. SSN/SINs are issued by the UN via the IMF, not by Social Security Administration or CRA 3. There are no judicial courts and hence no judges overseeing law. There are executive administrators enforcing statutes and codes. 4. You own no property, slaves can't own property. Read the deed to the property that you think is yours. You are listed as a tenant. 5. The Revolutionary War was a fiction/fraud/ruse. The King of England financially backed both sides of the American Revolutionary War. 6. America is a British colony. Britain is owned by the Vatican. 7. The Pope can abolish any law in USA/CA. Pope's laws are obligatory. The Pope has ordered the genocide and enslavement of millions of people. 8. We are slaves and own absolutely nothing, not even what we think are our children. 9. The duty of the police is not to protect you, it is to protect the corporation and arrest code breakers. 10. Everything in CA/USA is for sale, roads, bridges, yes, the Brooklyn Bridge is for sale, schools, hospitals, water, prisons, airports, etc. 11. Social Security/insurance is not insurance, nor is there a trust fund holding it. The SS/SI check comes directly from the IMF, which is an agency of the UN. 12. A1040/T1, filing, form is for tribute paid to Britain, the interest on the bankruptcy. 13. We are enemies of the state pursuant to Trading with the Enemy Act, 1933. 14. The Constitution cannot be used to defend oneself as none of us is a party to it. 15. Can/M is a British colony. CA/USA are private corporations, not territories. 16. The UN has financed the operations of CA/USA government for over 50 years. It owns every man, woman, and child and also holds all the land in kin/m in fee simple. 17. We do not owe public/national debt. We can discharge fictitious public obligations. 18. All wars are a scam/farce/fiction. USA/CA and other corporations were making loans to others all over the world during the Depression. USA financed the building of Germany's infrastructure in the 1930s. All those who died defending their non-existent countries died in vain. Switzerland is neutral, as this is where the Bank of International Settlements is located. Wars are simply a red herring to keep us believing that government is necessary. Crime impeding commerce, via breach of contract, is the only crime.